Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody. Hello, hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron. Justin's not with us this week, but we have an exciting show for everybody this week. I am so excited and pleased to have a special guest with us, and I've been thinking about the intro, and it is kind of a stupefying thing for me, but I'll say this: our guest is somebody that I was able to meet many years ago. I'm going to say it's 1991. Thank you, sir. Back in 1991, and so you can imagine I was quite the 20-something knucklehead back then. But nonetheless, I wanted to have our special guest, Jerry Bowman, to come on and just talk about his experience. You know, this is beyond serendipity that this is happening today. I really do think that this is something that God engineered in a very strange and good, mysterious way. And we'll get to hear about that in a minute, because there's just so many things that have happened that are kind of far beyond coincidence. So without further ado, Jerry, welcome to the show, brother. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. And I look forward to sharing my experience.
Well, I guess, you know, I'm going to sit back here and just listen for a few minutes for sure. Kind of tell our listeners how you and I met, more of a coaching frame. I'd rather us use than a counseling frame, if you know what I mean. But right. tell us, you know, tell our listeners what was going on in your life and what all was happening, and take it from there.
Well, in 1991, life was getting bad. I was getting a divorce. My business, I had a partnership that was falling apart. You know, I don't want to say I was drinking a lot, but I was drinking a lot. I was highly depressed. And however, I think the greatest aspect of that time was denial. The amount of denial I was in is that I wasn't drinking that much and I could manage everything. So, but I thought I needed some help. And I thought the help would come in the form of antidepressants. So I walked in, and I was at Kaiser Permanente, and I made an appointment to see a therapist who happened to be Bruce Cameron in 1991. The amazing events that take place are I went in with Bruce to tell him how depressed I was, in the hope of convincing him to give me the medication I thought I needed. And I talked to him about 45 minutes. I think very poignant about how my life was difficult. And at the end of that 45 minutes, he picks the phone up and says, "I can get you in a treatment center." My first thought is, I really got a bozo here. Number one, what is a treatment center and what is it for? He says, "Well, it's for your drinking." I said, "Well, I don't have a drinking problem. I have none." He said, "Ask me how much I drank," and I lied. You know, you always lie. You round off. If you have a six-pack, it's one beer. If you have two six-packs, it's two beers. So I lied, and no big deal. And so we set up another appointment, and I came back for the second one. And this time, he talked more and more about my situation. Never offered to prescribe any medication. But then said, "You know, if you want to come back here, I want you to sign a contract with me. And that contract says, for 1 week, I will not drink." I said, and I thought about it. I said, "Well, I can do a week. You know, to get this medication, I'll make it." You know, so I signed the contract and I agreed to it. And for 1 week, I did not drink. I thought that was amazing. So I came back for the second session and we were talking, and I don't remember one word that was said because I was waiting for Bruce to say, "Did you take a drink?" And he didn't. So I was not listening. I'm not even sure what I was talking about, because that was the whole show for me, him to ask me how good I was. So we agreed to have another appointment. And as I was about ready to leave, he said, "Did you have a drink?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, that's great. Would you sign this contract again?" And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. I'm here for antidepressants. And this guy's asking me to sign a contract not to drink. So I said, "Yeah." Offhandedly, said, "Yeah, I'll do it." So I signed it again. And I went out and I drank every night for the next 6 days. Sobered up on the seventh. So when I went in to see Bruce, you know, I wouldn't look like I had been drinking. Well, I went in. He said to me, "Did you drink?" And then this was the kicker. This is the thing that shattered my thinking. I said, "No." And I'm thinking, wait a minute, I'm a grown man. I'm 40 some years old. Why am I lying to this guy? I couldn't figure that out. So we talked some more. We talked some more about going to meetings, which I didn't really know what an AA meeting was. And he said, "Here's what I want you to do. I know there's a meeting in North Raleigh." He gave me the address. "Would you go there and investigate it for me and bring a report back?" I'm going, he's not asking me to go to the meeting. He's asking me to survey it for him. So I said, "Sure." So I went to that meeting. And in conclusion, then I'll tell you what happened at the meeting. That baby put a seed in my brain that has stayed forever. So I sat through this hour of these poor people and their suffering and their horrible lives thinking, boy, they all need to be here. They do. They need this. It's not for me. So I left and I went back and told Bruce about this. And he said, "Well, still can get you in a treatment center." And I'm just like, I'm really confused. So I said to him, I said, "Okay, you know, do we want to set up another appointment?" And he said, "Well, I'm moving. I will not longer be." The guys are Parmenti. And I said, "Well, there goes my antidepressants." So he left. Now, what happened afterwards because of that meeting and the fact that Bruce would let me lie to him. Oh, I did. Excuse me. I did ask you one other question. I said, "How do you know if I'm an alcoholic?" He says, "Well, I know a lot and you kind of make a representation of it." I said, "Well, okay. So he left, and psychologically and emotionally, my life kept declining to the point where.
And real quick, I want to make sure that I didn't abandon. I literally left. My tenure there was up. I literally signed a contract with the Justice Department and left. So just so everybody knows, I just didn't walk up on you.
He abandoned me, but no, I'm not. Now, he did make a recommendation that I follow up in, and of course I didn't. I mean, not that denial is prevalent, or I truly didn't believe Bruce anyway. So.
There you go.
But then the next thing that occurred, as my life got worse, one day at home, I collapsed on the floor in emotional and psychological pain, and I was like coming apart, and the only thing I could think about was that doggone AA meeting. And I went, and it was like a life bolt. Again, I want you to understand, very confusing. Anyway, I didn't know where to go. So I looked up AA in the phone book. And by the way, to understand, I was going through some physical problems. And so I knew that eating sugar. So I went to a bakery and got a half a dozen donuts. And I found the phone booth. By the way, there were phone booths. There were not cell phones. Then. We didn't all have them, that is. Right. So I'm in a phone booth dialing up AA in our community, eating donuts so I don't have this withdrawal thing going on. Exactly. They gave me the address of a meeting. And I went there. And that was my first meeting in 1991. I went for a while. I'd been dating a lady that we had broke up. I left my wife, by the way. I was dating somebody I met who was an alcoholic, doing really good. And we had broken up. And I got into AA, and I stopped drinking for a while here. And then our relationship fell apart. And I continued on in a very struggle with AA because I truly didn't understand it. I didn't know I had a problem. Denial was still prevalent. I had no thought of staying here. So I got a call from the ex-girlfriend. We were to get together. So to help salvage this relationship with her, I started drinking again. That lasted for 2 weeks, and it fell apart again. So that when I'm going to say this was around April, May of 1991. So in September, when I had this collapse, I went to my first AA meeting on September 6, 1991. And I stayed. I stayed for many reasons. One of them was the biggest one was fear. The fear of not being at ease. I'm still trying to figure things out. It took me about 3 months before I would admit I was an alcoholic at an AA meeting. So as time went along, I met some people there. I started hanging out with some people.
Let me cut you off. What was it that turned the key for you to say you were an alcoholic? What had to happen for you to say that?
I was at a meeting, and by the way, there were some young people, which I didn't understand. I was 44 years old. I'm going, how can you be 19 years old and be in AA? That's ridiculous.
Right.
So this gal who was going to be the chairperson, who was in her 20s or whatever, starts off by saying, I'm the chairperson tonight, and I didn't prepare for a topic. Now I have a resentment. So she said, but I got this phrase I read in the big book. He said, we're going to discuss that tonight. And the phrase was restless, irritable, and discontented. Now, the way my mind works is it's like a Rolodex. All of a sudden it hits something, and it just kind of, item after item kind of rolls out, and I can feel it. I could tell that at restless and irritable, restless and discontent was in my life at 8 years old. I wasn't drinking. I didn't take my first drink until I was 13. My first blackout was 14. My heyday began at 18, and at 20 years old, I literally drank my way out of college. But that phrase just completely started to solidify. Why was I restless, irritable? And nothing to do at that time what I call alcoholism, but it was the door that opened up to begin to look at why I was. And by the way, I always felt restless, irritable, and discontented. So as I went to these meetings, I took the psychological approach. I thought the steps, honest God truth, that were hanging on that shade were like a mantra. The goal to stay sober was to memorize them. That was it. If I could memorize all those steps, my life would get better. I forgot the part about working the steps. That didn't come till later. So it took me 4 years to do a 4-step. But let me say that and then jump back. My wow. First month, yeah, I know. I was going to make it perfect, like everybody. I didn't understand how people could do a 4-step in the first year. Truly didn't understand. But my first sponsor we met, I sat there and I told him my story, the whole story. And I got done. And this is the other, I call it a psychological shift. First was restless, irritable, and discontented. The second one, I used to tell the same story to friends, but it was called the story of a wild and crazy guy. I got down with
Steve
my first
Martin.
Sponsor.
Huh? The Steve Martin wild and crazy
guy? Yeah, exactly. And when I got done, I looked at him and I said, this isn't a story of a wild and crazy guy, is it? And he said, no. I said, it's the story of an alcoholic. And he said, yeah. It was then, and that's about three months into the program, I began to say, my name's Jerry and I'm an alcoholic. Okay. Restless, irritable, and discontented. Number one. All and right. Number two, my story is about an alcoholic. And that was the psychic change beginning. But awesome. I still was miserable. for 4 years, sober, miserable, discontented, and had no idea what the hell was going on. One of the comments I made to my second sponsor, who became my spiritual one, in essence, that everything that he did had to do with your relationship with a higher power. And no matter what I tried to do, any lie I tried, I'll install myself. How do you know I'm not lying? He said, well, you don't lie to me, Jerry. You lie to yourself that you're going to lie to me. So I don't care if you lie to me. It's not hurting me. It's destroying you. So I began to realize I couldn't lie to my sponsor. So one of the things driving, and I was with him for about 2 years, and I would have these amazing problems. One of them is I wanted to destroy my partner because I was not, it wasn't going, by the way, I wanted to destroy all my relationships, not just my partner. Most of my marriages and things like that, I destroyed. I wanted him to quit. So I wrote a list on a legal pad of 19 reasons why he was incompetent. And that's what we had a meeting. 19, not three or four, 19 reasons why he was incompetent. I had enough background in AA at the time to know that I needed to run this by my sponsor. So we met for coffee, which we did 1,000 times. And I gave him that list. And I said, here's what I want to do. I want this partnership to break up. And I'm going to meet with him today at 10. It's now 8. Here are 19 reasons why I think he's incompetent. And I gave him the list. He read two, turned it over and said, no, you're not going to do that. He said, what do you mean? He said, you're going to make amends. I said, make amends? For what? This is him. He's incompetent. No. What you're going to do is meet him today. And what you're going to do is tell him about you. So I can't tell him my story. No. Tell him what you're afraid of, what your fears are. Tell him things about what you want to do, not what he wants to do. And most of all, you can never use the word you. Every sentence must begin with an I. I looked him straight in the eye. He says, you know, I have a business that has 100 people employed in it. I'm intelligent. I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. Why in the world would I want to do it? Number two, I don't even know how to do it. Even if you're telling me to do it. He says, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go into the room. You're going to take this 19 things and throw them on the floor. You're going to ask God to put the right words in your mind and in your mouth. I said, okay. Second thing is you're going to tell them by saying, I feel when this goes this way, how it affects you. I said, I don't get it, but I'll do it. So then I was like a lamb. I followed his directions. I walked into the office. My partner was there. He said, we're going to have a meeting? And I said, yeah. And I walked into the office. He was like this. All right, give it to me. I got to tell you guys, I wish there was recording because I truly don't remember what I said, but I never used the word you. I said to him, do you know my father died an alcoholic? I said, I feel uncomfortable when this happens. I feel this way about this. When I got done, and again, I'm not sure exactly, I looked up at him and he was sitting back like this. Arms open, he said, I didn't believe you had a good bone in your body. He says, yes, I'll work with you. That was the ninth step. I hadn't done the fourth step. But what my sponsor did, he stopped me from being the asshole that I was for a moment and experienced something that I didn't understand. I didn't know how to duplicate. By the way, I did have another sponsee do the same thing, which is another story. Yeah. And didn't know what the results were. Now, because I didn't have any real strong background in AA yet, everything I did that day with him, I destroyed within the next 30 days. And the partnership broke up. And I got served divorce papers from my wife. And then I came. Then I came back into AA very strong, very strong, knowing that something had to change in my life. The next spiritual event that was changing, this is what, understand, I carried my four-step around in a briefcase, and I would write on it, and every time it said, you know, I'm angry at so-and-so, I always came up what they did. What they did and why it they shouldn't have done it, not how it affected me. I could never get to the exact nature of my wrongs. If a person like me doesn't find that, and it's only one item, you will be stuck. There will be no spiritual, emotional change that will occur. And it hadn't occurred in me yet because I still was fighting everybody and everything. I still was miserable. In fact, 3 years or 4 years in sobriety, I raised my hand and said, you know, I truly believe based on this program, I probably could die sober, but I'll be damned if I'm going to die happy. You know, why do you want to be sober?
Great line. Now,
the crucial part is I met with this sponsor and he looked at me and said, Jerry, you've never met anybody in AA who's been sober and as unhappy as you. I suggest that you do something. Soon, or you're going to drink.
Serenity.
Yeah. I was going to drink. So I said, well, what do you want me to do? He said, well, I want you to pick a home group. All you're doing is bouncing around to different groups to find out people that are impressed by what you have to say, which is not impressive.
Yeah, group shopping. Yeah.
Yes. Second of all, you're going to go to one AA meeting every day. I said, well, that's not possible. That's what it is. I said, what do you mean? He said, every day on your calendar, you have things, appointments you have to do, right? I said, yeah. Every day you're going to put on your calendar AA meeting for the rest of the year. I said, but what if I don't make one? He said, not a problem. You got one for the next day. And that was the rationale. Is if I can't make it, it's got to be a good reason. If there was a good reason, I had an appointment the next day for an AA meeting already scheduled.
There you go.
I went to, and I hate saying this number because it sometimes sounds like I'm bragging, to about 900 meetings in a year. But I think based on Bruce meeting with you, the treatment center might have been an option. If not, it was 900 meetings.
You got it. You got it. And IOP. Hey, let me just interject something here. I've been listening. It's interesting because you held the same mindset for years, even though you started the meeting process, you were still, you know, trying to take charge of things yourself. I want to pause here for my fellow practitioners and coaches out there, particularly the ones that are in recovery themselves.
Okay.
And I want to say this, is that when you walked in the room after 30 minutes, I wasn't 100% convinced you were an alcoholic. I was 1,000% convinced. 1,000. And yeah. I knew exactly in my mind what you needed. I knew exactly what you needed. I knew the prescription. I could have mapped out my fantasy recovery for you. And I could have made the mistake that many people make in my chair, you know, to take a harder line with you. You know what I mean? Take a more directive line. And because I didn't, and I invited you to survey a meeting, and I put off certain things to get your foot in that door, just to get your foot in that door in a meaningful way, in a non-high-pressure way, you know, you got to take 90 meetings in 90 days, you know, criminal justice, you know what I mean, how that works with some of these folks, right? Didn't do that to you. I didn't play you like that. I didn't do that, you know. And thank God, because look, I mean, your mind is like a steel trap, you know what I mean? That wouldn't have worked anyway, and it might have alienated you. Seriously, I could have alienated you from that whole process, had I taken a different zealous tone, which, and I've done that before. I've taken the zealous tone, and I'm sure that in my 30 plus years of doing this, I've screwed up. Make no mistake about it. I mean, I know that, but I'm so anyway. I just wanted to say that, and what you're saying to me now, with how your program of recovery really has taken, you know, no, you didn't take any big leaps. You went to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. You know what I mean? And we'll pick it back up from there. But I just felt compelled to say, you know, thank God that I took the slow boat with you, because I was leaving. You know, I knew that my tenure was going to be up. You know what I mean? It was just a straight contract, yeah. Play, Kaiser Permanente. You know, it's managed care. You know the drill. You know, I was, but I knew not to even compromise my intervention strategy with you, even though I knew my tenure was coming. I knew that you would just hopefully make the next right decision, and you did. So anyway, rant over.
The thing that, just to piggyback on that, the thing to remember is that, you know, this is a human condition. It's not just alcoholism. The world is plagued with defects of character. This is why we kill each other, starve each other. You know. But I don't want to get into that aspect of it. But what we're looking for, me in particular, was some kind of permanent, not temporary, psychic change. And I mean psychic, a new way to think, a new way to believe in things. A new, almost, well, we talk about it. There's a book called New Pair of Glasses. Great read. I had to have some core beliefs, personality, and emotional relationship with the world had to be redone at 44. It didn't happen at 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. I missed it.
For sure.
The other thing is about shoving it down people's throat. I have tried that, and I'll tell that story a little bit better because it didn't later. I mean, it didn't work. So after 4 years of avoiding self-reflection, avoiding to find the right, not defects of, well, let's say defects of character. They were there. I knew what they were. Didn't know what drove them. I didn't know where the energy was coming from. You can identify everything negative about you or positive, but if you don't know where it's coming from, the energy behind it, you're not going to change. So after 4 years, I started to date again. I remember recalling an incident prior to that with my sponsor, the spiritual sponsor, in which after going to him dozens of times with life problems, him having me go out and do an exercise. I'll give you an example of an exercise he did. And then I'll go back to why it was so important from his spiritual position. I came to him one day and complained about a woman at a meeting who said I couldn't stand. She said the same damn stuff all the time, and I'm never going back to that meeting again. He said, really? He says, what does she say? I said, well, she says, by the grace of God, I'm sober today. I know that's BS. So he looked at me, he says, really? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go back to that meeting. And I want you, after the meeting, to go up to her and tell her how much you enjoyed your sharing. And I said, you're crazy. I am not going to do that. He said, yeah, go on. Again, like a lamb. Went to the meeting. I listened to her share. Still, I don't remember her name, but it's Sally. I enjoyed what you had to say tonight. I was faking it. She turned to me and says, Jerry, I really like the stuff you have to share. I appreciate you being at this meeting. She became a friend. When you experience this kind of event, it's permanently imprinted in you. You're going like, well, why would my kindness, fake as it is, bring out this response and transfer me, in my opinion, to a point where I could respect her? It wasn't her that was the problem. It was my pair of glasses. the most significant thing that happened in my sobriety is, how do I get from being sober, going to meetings, chanting the chant, and truly changing to become whole?
Chanting the chant. Love it.
Well, if you're still in denial, you're just chanting the chant. You know, it becomes a social program, not a recovery. Right. I started dating a woman. I missed them.
Wait. I don't want you to miss taking the exit off the freeway and the club.
I won't. Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right on that one. Let me tell you another story before this happened. Probably 2 years into my sobriety, I was driving down the interstate. I was lamenting AA and that it wasn't working for me. It wasn't working. And I was going to make a decision, the hell with it. This program is worthless. I'm going to go ahead and stop at my own stopping grounds and start drinking, which I needed to take to go to the bar. And it was a dreary place. It was one of those places that you walk into and it's dark and it stinks. Alcohol's stale, bathroom smells there. And that's where I was going back to. I exited the interstate, and when I got off, as I made the right turn on my left, never thinking about it, 11:30 at night p.m. is a AA clubhouse that I'd been going to. In fact, that's the one I got sober at. 11:30 at night, the lights are on. Well, they're not open at 11:30 at night. So I had this crazy thought. I'm going to drive over there. Maybe there's somebody there. So I walked inside, and there were six guys playing cards at a table. I was in such bad shape that night, I didn't want to even talk to them. Because I didn't want to hear anything about AA. But I didn't want to go drink either. So I sat in the chair, and I grabbed a seat, and across the way from me was a clock. It said 11:35. And I watched it. And when it hit 12 midnight, I had another day of sobriety, which is what we're asking for. My obsession, my craving, all went away.
Wow.
This is the true miracle of recovery. Is why? Why would that happen? I mean, I don't know if there's literature, but it did. I changed physically. I stopped craving because I sat there for 25 minutes. That dumbfounded me. You know, that stuff sticks in your brain. You're always going, okay, maybe this isn't something to figure out. Maybe there's no way to figure it out, but it works. Nothing else that I did in my life worked. Nothing. So probably about a year and a half after that, dealing with my sponsor and doing these, let's call these recommendations. I need a lot of them. I kept following through with them. Didn't really get to the point where I could say, my name's Jerry, I'm a recovering happy alcoholic yet. So I started dating a lady. She was not a person. She was in recovery. Very sweet lady. I don't think she has an angry part in her, just the alcoholism part. And I got to interject this. Prior to this, I was riding around with my sponsor one day after a breakup of another woman and said to him, when am I going to know I have the right woman in my life? How do I know how to find her? He said, well, you won't. I said, what are you talking about? I said, how do I know when she's the right woman? He said, when you don't want to change a hair on her head, that'll be the right one. So what does that mean? So when you become the right person. He always told you that I didn't get. So I dated this woman in 4.5 years. And we were having a good time. She didn't fit the model that I had in my brain. My classic response of any relationship, if it got involved, was, hey, just so you know, I don't want to get married. That's another fascinating AA phenomena, too. The reason I didn't want to get married again is I kept getting divorced. I'd been divorced twice. Relationships had been gone bad. You know, so you're thinking, like, nothing's going to really work. So, hey, we'll date for a while, have a good time, and then I'll move on. So one day we're in her kitchen. I just fired my one sponsor. I talked to the spiritual one.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So I don't have a sponsor, still going to meetings. And she looks at me and says, you know, you need to get a sponsor? And I said, yeah, I'll get a sponsor. She was really saying, if you don't get a sponsor, you're out of here. So she said, you know what else I think you could do? It might help you. I said, well, do a four step on all the women. Now, understand, I had done a four step. And I want to tell you that when I got to six step and, you know, asked God to help me get with all of these issues, I actually said, help, I would do it. And then I ran to the seven step and almost drank again. She sat down, why don't you do a four step in all the women in your life? And I said, oh, okay. I said, well, here's the problem. I need a piece of paper and pen. She said, well, I didn't mean with me. I said, you're going to understand. I don't know what it is, but if I get up from this table, it's never going to happen. If I don't do it right now, I think it's going to be a problem. I don't know why, but I know that I got to do it right now. She gets a pen and paper. And the funny part about it, I could remember Susan Kalita from ninth grade. I went up and listed every woman in my life up until, I'm thinking, well, when I get done here, I'm out of here. She'll throw me out. To the last person I was dating, which is only a year before. Somebody said, she said, well, what's going on here? So I said, well, Susie Kalita dumped me for another guy. How did it make you feel? I said, horrible. What was your exact nature of wrongs? I said, I don't know. Went to Sally. Same thing. What's your part in it? It's not me. I went through, I don't know how many of us, a dozen. Every one of them, she said, what is the exact nature of your wrong? Now, I know my defects was that I was possessive and I was all of these things, controlling, manipulative, emotionally removed. Those are defects, but what's the power? Where is it coming from? I said, self-centeredness? She said, that's too general. She said, what is the exact nature of your wrongs? So I started writing on paper things and nothing really fits. So she said, let me write this down. And she writes emotional dependency.
Right.
My entire life, all the way back to 8 years old, fell before me. And I looked at her and I said, I know what it is. I needed something from them. And they could never give it to me. Therefore, it was never going to work. And that was a driving force for all my defects. And not only did it happen with women, it also happened with men, like my partner. Remember I'd mentioned him? I wanted to destroy that relationship. Mm-hmm. I know where it came from, and I hate to, because this is more psychological than it is AA, but it came from my mother. So I never grew up. I needed somebody, like a mother or somebody, to take care of me at all times. And when they failed, by the way, the formula was they were always going to fail. There was no way they were going to succeed.
Right, of course.
And my father, I had that, and my father was the alcoholic. So I had the gene of alcoholism. He died. He was a good alcoholic. He did never fall down. He never missed a day of work. He just drank. And at 65, he died from cirrhosis. That's the only reason I know he's an alcoholic.
Wow.
He was not a drunken, but he just, after work, on the weekends, my mother would shop, he would drink, my mother would. Anyway, you take that gene of alcoholism, you take that gene of emotional dependency, you put it together, and you got a real son of a gun. I don't think I really felt good in the relationship in my life. So all of a sudden, at that table, within seconds, this whole thing is transpiring. I realized that I have never been a victim. I was a volunteer on every crisis in my life. Everyone. I was the maker and the doer. I judged. And it was incredible. I had to learn to live with people without putting prescriptions on them or control on them. The beauty is the woman I was doing this with didn't reject me. We had been married for 23 years. Isn't that amazing?
That's fantastic.
We have a loving, caring relationship. I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Congratulations.
Oh, yeah. Now, the numbers are against you. But if I looked at every event, the ones I've shared with you and many others, there was always something happening. I'll give you an example of one. The reason I'm here tonight, I just shared this earlier with Bruce. I called Bruce about 15 years ago. I tracked him down in Texas somehow. Don't ask me how. Or 10 years ago. I was able to remember his name, and I Googled him, and I found him. That was a long time ago. So I was trying to think that I was going to call Bruce again because September 6th was my anniversary, my 29th. And I wanted to thank him again because you don't know, and this is what the key is, you don't know who you help. The beauty is you don't have any control over who you help. You can only have suggestions. If you try to think, I did this with people I sponsor, I'm going to help this guy get sober, I became a fool. All I can do is share my story with somebody. If they find something they like,
that's right.
I keep sharing and I make suggestions. I have sponsored people. One passed away last year from drinking. There was no way. I told him he was going to die 2 years before he died. The fear of death did not stop him from drinking. The fear of living kept him
from being sober.
So let me share another one. You know, time for another story?
Got 7 minutes, so hard stop. So, yes, sir.
I was a gentleman and I was talking to him several times, and we were going through the steps together, and I'm going like, I'm feeling he's not really getting it. And he says, Jerry, I want to go on this retreat. I said, okay, it's a good idea. It's a spiritual retreat. Go and enjoy yourself, and maybe something will happen. He was walking back into our AA meeting from the parking lot. And as I looked out the window, I knew something had happened. I knew he got it. He walked in the door and said, Jerry, I get it. I said, what do you get? He says, I'm not God. And what he did, he surrendered right then and there. And he became a happy man.
Awesome.
The experiences, and this is where I'm going to go with this. AA is a program to have you experience things that are impossible, that go against your nature, and if you do, you will change. It's a slow process. Maybe some people it's faster. It took me almost 5 years. When you get there, you don't go backwards. You can't go backwards. You don't want to go backwards. At 4 years sobriety, maybe. 5 years, uh-uh. I was ready to put up with any negative thing coming down my line because I knew I had a part in it. Someone said, well, what if somebody attacks you? Well, that's 100% time I didn't have a part in it, but I would know that. But all this other stuff, finances, fear of financial insecurity. I'm older. Health issues. All part of living, all part of I can deal with it, all part I can face it. I'm no longer dependent on my emotions or anybody else's to get through this stuff. One more thing.
I want to ask you real quick. I want to be quick about this concept. There's been a lot of research about how people get into recovery, particularly from alcohol and other substances. And the research shows, and this isn't Dr. Fauci type of shit. I'm talking about legitimate. Anyway, shows that more people heal from their addictions through a spiritual recovery, okay, than AA alone. This isn't about, but I want to ask you something. Was your spiritual change, and your AA is your AA, or are they one and the same? Or,
well, I'm going to say that it's you. Yeah, it's not one and the same, because if you go to a meeting and the ones you say you see on television, they don't look like crazy places. And there's a lot of stuff that goes there. But the spiritual part does come from there, because you start to get so you can't drink.
Yeah.
You got to work on this defect. The defect, there's a saying, got to think about it a minute. It's in the big book. Any desire can separate me from the will of God. That's the spiritual program right there. And that's the key. But the spirituality most likely doesn't come first because I'm still full of these defects and hangups and worries and fears and anger.
Your higher power. Yes.
Yeah. There's another one, a little saying. It says, having had a complete relief of my alcoholism, why then can I not apply these to everything in my life?
Right.
Step six says, having had a complete, I just forgot.
Spiritual conversion.
Yeah.
Practice these in our daily affairs type of thing.
So, but you got to get sober. You got to work on the defects. You got to have the right people. And AA is not the church. Spirituality is separate from, but it comes through. If that makes sense.
Thank you. I wanted to make that distinction for numerous reasons for about 20,000 people that'll listen to this in the future. So thank you for that. Well, look, we're inside 3 minutes here, and I don't want to cut you short. I told you that this would go fast, and it really has. And I know you've just barely scratched the surface. And Jerry, I want you to come back again and talk about more facets of your recovery, because I just love how clear and cogent you are, and you're the way your mind thinks. There are so many men, and in particular, I'm saying men, and there's some women too, probably, that think like you, but so many men that are on the fence. And they're just like you, brother. And that's, you know, it is what it is. I mean, and to be able to hear you and not from a guy like me or a guy that's in the recovery space or a coach or whatever. And I know that gets cheesy and it gets old for a lot of people. And I get it because I'm cheesy and getting there. Now I'm not that cheesy. But anyway, that's why I have folks like Jerry come on the show, man, unscripted, you know, just tell it like it is. So again, sir, thank you so much for coming on the show today, sharing your experience, man. And I promise you that people are going to hear this, and I promise, you know, somebody's going to resonate with this. And please, come back maybe in a 6 months or so, and let's talk again if you're willing.
I am, and I want to share with you. This helps me. That's why I come on.
I know, brother.
I don't want to forget my story.
Thank you. Yeah. So it's just good for yourself and everybody. And thanks again for coming. Well, folks, there it is. There's another fantastic show. I said it would be a good show, and it certainly was, on the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts. You can listen to us on iHeartRadio. Yes, the little podcast that could is running on all those platforms organically, without a lot. It was based on attraction rather than promotion, we might say. And we have social media. Come to our Facebook group. And Jerry, I'm going to send you a Facebook friend request if you would, you know, let's connect on that if you have Facebook. And come and see us on our social media platforms, Concierge Coaches. I can be, my website's conciergecoach.net. So again, everybody, have a blessed week and a safe week. And we'll see you here next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.